Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Tisha's Tea Room, the place where conversations conquer cancer. I'm your host and favorite breast cancer survivor, Tisha, and I'm so glad that you're listening with me today. As I sip on some peppermint tea, I can't wait to talk to my next guest. I met Ms. Angela Baker, affectionately known as Jersey, back in December at the San Antonio Breast Cancer Symposium in San Antonio, Texas. I knew from the moment we met, I knew that she was someone that I wanted as a friend. Jersey is a three-time breast cancer survivor and is currently living with stage 4 metastatic breast cancer. Born in New Jersey, she currently lives in Charlotte, North Carolina, and is making an impact in her community and in the breast cancer world. Miss Jersey, how you doing, girl?
Hey, I'm fine. How are you?
Good. Thank you so very much for taking the time out to come and be on the show today. Let's just start.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, absolutely. Anytime. Let's just start off by chatting a little bit about your breast cancer journey. You not only survived breast cancer once, but three times. And as I said earlier in my intro, you're currently thriving and surviving with stage 4 metastatic breast cancer. And for those that aren't aware of what metastatic breast cancer is, it is when the cancer has spread to other parts of your body. So just share with us for a few minutes, Jersey, about what was that journey like for you, and how did that actually make an impact on your life?
The journey started off in 2003 as BCIS, breast cancer in your ducts. It's called ductinomal in situ. And I was 32 years old, and basically I didn't really know a lot about breast cancer. I didn't know anyone who had breast cancer, and I was just eager to fix it and move on with my life because I was told it was 99.5% chance it would never return.
Right.
And in 2010, it returned as a local reoccurrence, and in 2011, I became metastatic.
Wow. And like I said, you are just thriving and surviving with this beast. And hats off to you, girl. Just truly hats off to you. With COVID-19 just running rampant in our communities in the United States, how has that changed your way of receiving your treatment? Has it changed your way of living day to day? Because I watch you on social media and you are just on it.
It has changed my treatment. Well, it changed my treatment earlier. I used to get shots when I first became metastatic. I got like 3 shots, so I no longer get one of the shots anymore. But the other shot that I was getting in my arm, it was held off. So from March until June, I didn't get it. So I recently started getting it again. Actually, COVID has sped up the process because they want to get you in and out there as quickly as possible. So now when I go get my shots, there's really no one in there but, you know, me, which is great. I'm in and out. COVID has also changed my life where, like you said, I'm always traveling. And I haven't been able to travel. And right now I think I'm going into a travel depression. And I'm like, okay, things are opening up. Where can I go? Like, my tagline is live life now. So am I going to just keep staying here and not living my life now? Or am I going to, you know, bite the bullet and jump on an airplane? I think it'll be the latter, but we'll see. We'll see.
I love how you're not letting this keep you down. You, like you said, you are continuing to travel and do things with caution, of course, and you're definitely being careful and safe. But I just love how you're, like your motto said, you're living your life and you're living it to the fullest. And that just sends such a great message out to those that are living with this disease, not only with metastatic breast cancer, but also with anyone that has breast cancer in general, that you can still live your life to the fullest. You don't have to let this keep you down. You know, you have breast cancer. Breast cancer does not have you, and you're living it. And I watch you, like I said, I watch you on social media, and I just see all the great things that you're doing, and you're such an inspiration. So, wow, yes, keep doing what you're doing. And with that being said, you know, your breast cancer journey has definitely given you a voice, such a big voice on top of that, that you use to advocate for yourself, and not only for yourself, but others, and especially for women of color. Talk to us about what are things that you're doing to use your voice to advocate for the African-American community so that they can become more aware of metastatic breast cancer, breast cancer in general, and how they can become more educated.
One of the ways that I advocate is like you said, to use my voice and to encourage anyone that has a platform to highlight Black women with breast cancer and men, because if you don't see someone that looks like you, then you don't pay attention, and you think that it has nothing to do with you, when it absolutely has everything to do with us, because we're dying at a higher rate, at 40% higher rate than any other you know, nationality or race. So with that being said, you know, I try to encourage people to advocate for themselves, to use their own voice, to ask for seats at the table, and everything that we do when we speak to our doctors. You know, if a doctor tells you something, question it if you don't think that that's, you know, the case, or if you just don't understand. If you see a commercial and you don't see anybody that looks like you, use your voice, use your platform to say, hey, we need to see people that look like us so we can spread the word. You know, we can, if they see someone like us, then they'll trust the process. They'll trust the system. You know, African-Americans have a higher distrust rate for various reasons, of the system, of doctors, of everything. So if you see someone like me being a voice for people that look like me, then you'll stop and you'll listen, and then you'll want to get involved. Because if we don't get involved, then no one's going to, you know, we lack in the research for us, because our cancers are different. Yes, breast cancer is the same under one umbrella, but as Black people, African Americans, it reacts differently to different things. I mean, we have different feelings towards it, different, just everything is different. And we have to address it as a different animal, like a car. They're all cars, but they all function differently.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
If we just sit here and sit back and do nothing, then there's not going to be a change, right? I mean, it's just like voting. If we just watch the polls and don't get up and go, then nothing's going to change. So, you know, using your voice comes with good, bad, and different responses, but that doesn't mean that you stop. One of my friends always tells me I'm the Angela Davis of the breast cancer community. And I said, I think that's who I was named after. So,
and I will say, when I met you in San Antonio and I was learning more about you and all these conferences and that you had attended and that you would share your knowledge and of how African-American women are not accounted for as we should. I'm like, wow, you know, she really, number one, she knows her stuff, and she is really making it everyone aware that, just like you said, we need to have a seat at the table too. Our research can be accounted for so that, again, we can be more knowledgeable of how it affects us as a community. So can you expound a little bit more about what were some of the conferences that you may have attended that you shared your perspective and your insight on?
At the San Antonio Breast Cancer Conference, I got to sit on a panel with Tiger Lily Foundation and, you know, just spreading, you know, again, our different Ami and Sheila and just, you know, using our platform, using our voices, the importance of African Americans having a seat at the table. And I'll never forget at that conference how one of the doctors, she said how she was excited, like one of the drugs, like the copay was $4. And I stood up and I said, to you, $4 is not a lot of money. However, I'm currently driving a patient that I call my VDOS. Her copay is $3, and every time I take her, she doesn't have $3. So it's either I go in my pocket and pay it, or we say add it to the bill. So
wow.
For you know, we need to get our counterparts, science, doctors, you know, anybody that doesn't look like us. We need them to be able to sit at our table and look at, you know, have eyes like we have eyes and see, you know, the reality of it. The reality of it is, you know, we don't even have good access to healthcare. We don't have transportation to healthcare. We don't have computers to access all these wonderful apps that everyone's creating.
Right.
Our families are more important than getting to the doctor's appointment. So, you know, you have to, like, take a step back. As things are advancing and technology is advancing and the world is advancing, you have to realize the people that don't really understand this stuff, and there's no one to really take their hand and help them and lead them and guide them and let them know what questions to ask or what to look for. So, I mean, I can go on and on. So it's just become really important to me, having a seat at a table, building your own table, because now I feel like that's what we have to do. We have to build our own table and take our own seat.
Right.
Because there's so many grassroots organizations run by African Americans who are getting overlooked. And we're out here in these streets, boots on the ground with COVID. And, you know, we don't have the resources or the funding, but yet we're still doing the work. And those are people that they're overlooked, and that's really something that's really dear to my heart is for us to have a seat at the table, not some of us, all of us.
All of us, absolutely. And like you said, if they don't give us a seat at the table, then we're going to make our own table, because we need to be heard. It's that important. And I know one of the ways that you have used your powerful voice in the breast cancer community. You are the founder of this wonderful nonprofit organization in Charlotte called Angel in Disguise. Tell us how did that become about, and what services do you provide with this nonprofit, and how those that are in the Charlotte, shout out to my family and friends in Charlotte, North Carolina, how can those in the Charlotte and surrounded areas, how can they use the service?
Angel in Disguise was founded in 2015, so in September she will be 5 years old. It came from a need that I saw just when I stopped working, handing out business cards, and it started as a for-profit organization, handing out business cards and running errands for people and giving my card to breast cancer organizations. And I received a call one day that someone needed to go to two doctor's appointments. Her children were at work, and she didn't have a way to get there. And she also didn't really have the money to pay for the service. And so I said, okay, I'll take her. And she lived about 30 miles from me. And she didn't know me. I didn't know her. I showed up at her house. And about 5 hours later, you know, we were like new friends. Again, I went to her appointments with her, you know, told her what questions to ask. Just kind of comforted her on the drive there, you know, asking her different questions or any concerns that she may have. And once I brought her back home, I started thinking, and I was like, if this lady has problems not getting there because her family members are at work or she doesn't have the funding, I said there has to be other people like that. And I researched to find out what you needed to do to start a nonprofit organization, and I was off and running. And we're located in Charlotte.
Okay.
Yep. We're located in Charlotte and serve the surrounding areas. And we provide complimentary transportation for all cancer patients to their treatment, their doctor's appointments, to surgery. So sometimes at 4 o'clock in the morning, I'm taking someone to surgery and I have to act as their emergency contact. Before COVID, I would go in the doctor's office with them. I have a couple patients, like, I'm taking them in wheelchairs. I'm undressing them because their family's sending them with me. You know, it's building relationships. It's giving them a sense of security, easing their fears, and letting them know what questions to ask. I call them VDOS because that means life. Every new VDOS gets a little angel in disguise bag with, they all have blankets in them and whatever other goodies we have, mostly through donations. And then if they're having surgery and they don't have family here, then we'll provide them, like, three meals to, you know, get them through, like, you know, big meals that they can have later for later. And basically that's what we do. Hopefully we're going to grow and add more programs, and hopefully one day we will be in a city near you.
You know, and I am looking forward to it, that you actually answered my next question. What do you see? How do you see Angel in Disguise expanding? And prayerfully, it will expand to cities outside of Charlotte and eventually outside of the state, where others can follow in your footsteps or work under you in your nonprofit to help those, just like you said, that have a hard time getting to those appointments or paying for medications because they have to make decisions whether or not to pay for medication or to keep food on the table, which are decisions no cancer patient or no patient in general should ever have to choose to do. So that is awesome, awesome. You are an angel. You are truly an angel. And we're going to talk some more toward the end on how they can get in touch with you to receive those services if those that are listening in the Charlotte area. But let's move on and let's talk about, well, you are just doing so much for so many people, and I love it and I admire it. So what are you doing, Jersey, to take care of you and to make sure that you stay sane and you don't let this depress you? Self-care is such a big, important piece in our lives right now, and how we need it, especially because we can't go out, we can't really do anything. So, what are you doing to keep yourself sane?
I spend a lot of time sitting in the backyard.
Okay, so you're an outdoors person.
Yeah. Okay. Actually, I'm sitting in the backyard now. My son lives in Colorado, and he was here for 20 days, and he just left last week. So I got to spend a lot of time with him, which I love spending time with my son. Like, I love it. Even though, you know, he's 28, and we fuss and we argue or whatever, but I miss him terribly. And spending time with him, spending time with family. Okay. Looking for vacations to go on.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, so you can only do so much. And then crafting. So, you know, I started making T-shirts. While my son and I was here, we thought of a new something to add to our thing. So I'm going to work on that today. And you guys will see it soon. And just trying to keep myself busy and reading. Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, I do Angel in Disguise yoga from 7:30 to 8 with one of my besties, Valencia, as the teacher. And I love it because it's her family and my family and anybody else who wants to join. And that was really good for me because I've always wanted to yoga and exercise. But right before COVID, I did join the Y, but now I can't go. So I really enjoy the yoga, and like I said, just spending time with family and friends, social distancing with family and friends, but
absolutely.
And, you know, I love to take naps. I love to take naps, so that helps. That helps keep me sane, too.
Rest is definitely an important thing for your body. It rejuvenates you, you know, keeps you fresh and alert. Yoga is also a great thing to do, to meditate, get your mind right, get your body right and relaxed, and definitely traveling. Traveling is something that for me, is my big thing, but, you know, now since COVID, you know, it is really, I'm getting, like you said, I'm getting depressed, travel depression too, so I'm like, I can't wait for us to be able to safely get out and travel again. I love the beach, so it's like I can't wait.
Me too.
To get myself out to some water when it's safe to do so. How was your support system when you were, as you're going through metastatic breast cancer right now in your treatment? I know you have, or do you have rather, a strong support system, and how have they helped you during your journey?
Yes, I have a very strong support system. And they probably think I'm like, I'm not saying I'm superwoman, but they probably think that, and probably like think that I'm okay all the time. So they probably don't check on me as much. I mean, but they always see me and talk to me or whatever. But you know, as a breast cancer patient, sometimes you're going through things and, you know, you're not always calling people like, woe is me or whatever. You just kind of deal with it or whatever. But they are the type of people that I know when I need them, I can just pick up the telephone and they'll be right here.
Right.
So.
Right.
And my mom, you know, she's always like, did you eat today? Or, you know, I'm going to cook, or, you know, just want to do stuff for me or whatever. I'm an only child, so I'm very independent.
Okay.
But when I do need the help, I don't have a problem asking for it. And I'm grateful for all the help that I do receive. And even with Angel in Disguise, you know, if I need help, they're right there to help me. So.
Absolutely. So,
and that's important for anybody, you know?
Right.
Because this thing, could be so mentally challenging. Like yesterday, one of my breasties, I just said that she's basically in hospice, but our family's taking care of her. And I probably said every curse word I knew to myself because I'm just like, no, not her. Like, no. So, you know, that's got me a little bit down. But, you know, I try to keep my mind busy and faithful and focused and praying that, you know, God has the last word.
Absolutely. And we know that he absolutely does. And, yes, having a great support system definitely does help. And you definitely want to be able to have somebody to talk to whether it's a family member, a therapist, just someone journaling. Just do something to get those feelings, to get your feelings out, talking about it so that you can't, so because you definitely don't want to hold those feelings in. What would be your advice?
Right.
Yeah, what would be your advice to a woman, and especially a woman of color, that's been newly diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer? What would you say?
First of all, I would tell her to seek a second opinion. Just, you know, because different doctors want to proceed differently. Ask all the questions that they can think of, and then write them down. Whatever questions, you know, they think they have later on. Don't rely so much on Dr. Google. Don't be so hard on yourself. I mean, you know, we all have pity parties and things of that nature. Just don't stay there because, you know, your cancer feeds off of your vibe, your spirit, you know. So you have to stay positive. Yeah. You have to stay positive. It's not just because someone has breast cancer doesn't mean it's an automatic death sentence. And to be faithful, look at their diet, look at things that they can do to change, you know, for a better outcome and to get a good support system, make sure they have a good support system. I run into a lot of patients that say that they don't have a support system, and that makes me very sad. So, yeah, definitely ask questions. Don't go off of what my doctor said. I mean, you have to be your own doctor sometimes and your own advocate. So if something doesn't sound right, feel right, look right, then you question it. And you question it until you get the answers that you need for yourself.
I like how you said, if you don't like something that your doctor said, that is so profound. And it's so important because you want a medical team that is going to not only support you physically, but you want a medical team that's going to be compassionate, that's going to be understanding.
Yes.
And if they don't do if what you feel that they are doing and giving you the best care that you feel as though that they're not giving to you, you have that right
to fire them.
Absolutely.
That
was something that when I heard that when we was at the San Antonio Breast Cancer Symposium, when I heard you all talk about that, that really stuck with me. I'm like, wow, you know, you don't just have to stick with what this particular doctor says. If they're not doing what you feel as though that they should be doing to give you the best care possible, you have that right to fire them and go to someone else that will give you that care, that will listen to you and not talk at you but talk with you. And
exactly.
I'm just grateful
exactly.
for myself when I was going through early stage that my team of doctors, they were the ones that listened and were compassionate. And so thank you for raising that point. That was a great point. So, Jersey, I have truly, truly, truly enjoyed talking with you today. This has been wonderful. And with everybody, how can they follow you on social media? Because you are all over the place, girl, and we need to know how to follow you. How can we find
you? On Facebook, it's Angel in Disguise, Inc. And on Twitter and Instagram, it's Angel Disguise _.
Well, you've heard it. Those are Miss Jersey's social media handles. And is there a number that may need services for Angel in Disguise besides the website that they can get in touch with you?
Yes, they can get in touch with us at 980-999-1243. And that stands for One Aid.
Nice. And I will put all of this information on all of my social media handles, and I will have Jersey do the same. But, Ms. Jersey, thank you again for taking the time to come on and talk with us and just giving us another avenue for those that are going through breast cancer and metastatic breast cancer, just giving them another avenue of ways of getting help, doing what you are doing. I appreciate you. I'm so glad that we met, and I'm so glad that I can call you friends and that you are in my circle of breast cancer sisters. I'm so proud of you, and I cannot wait when it is safe for us to travel. And when I'm able to travel back home to South Carolina, we are due for another meetup, and I cannot wait. But thank you again for coming on. And you definitely take care.
And I want to say congratulations. I want to say congratulations to you, and thank you for giving us a platform to speak on. I'm so proud of you and Tisha's Tea Room.
Thank you so much. So, absolutely. Thank you. This has been on my heart ever since I have been in remission. So this, again, is my purpose. And, again, just giving another platform of raising awareness for African-American women so that we can definitely bridge that gap on
beating
breast cancer and just staying well and healthy. So thank you for that. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, and you have a great day.
Thank you, and I just want to thank everyone for listening today. I hope that you have truly been blessed by what you have heard today, like I was, because I have truly been blessed by Miss Jersey. But until next time, everyone, this is your host and your favorite breast cancer survivor, Tisha, signing off on Tisha's Tea Room. I pray that you all stay safe and stay well. Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.